Well, hello, good afternoon, Sláinte, and welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. My name is Scotty Hertz, joining you live from the Hertz Bunker. It's my chilly in the Hertz Bunker. I might have to either start a fire or move, I'm not sure what. Joining me on the line via the miracle of Skypeophonium is Adam A. Donaldson from his Fortress of Solitude in the north of town. Adam, how are you today? Adam A. Donaldson, are you there, sir?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you on, like, the ISS? Or I'm not sure where you are. I have no idea.
I'm in suspense, because it's October and it's almost sweeps, and so we need to get some good juice going with the show.
Yeah,
we want to get through with ratings.
A slight mild panic there because I couldn't hear you, but now you've joined us. It's fantastic. Today on the show, at the bottom of the hour, we have Adam actually had an interview with Councillor Kathy Downer about many issues, but in particular infrastructure projects in town, namely the library. Dun, dun, dun. Talk about suspense. But before that, we're going to talk a bit about what it's like to be a politician, probably anywhere in the world today, but Canada in particular. There's been a few incidents that have makes you kind of question where protesters are coming from these days. But before that, oh my goodness, I take it you survived the entire debate, Adam. I know we commit to these things because we do this show, dedication, but the trending online and everywhere was tons of people saying that they could not watch Trump v. Biden just because it was such a train wreck. People have used more colorful language than that. I'll stick with train wreck. In particular, Trump's penchant for interruption, I believe the official number was 73 times he cut Joe Biden off, among everything else. We could probably do a whole hour on this, but we only have the allotted 12.5 minutes. What are your thoughts? I'm sure they're good.
I mean, it was to be expected, actually, because, I mean, Donald Trump... I realized this right before the debate started. Donald Trump hasn't had to debate anyone in 4 years, even just in terms of, like, taking answers from media who he would not consider friendly. But even, like, just strictly in formal debate setting, he hasn't had to debate anyone in 4 years. And usually there is this initial bad first debate appearance by the incumbent president because they are behind in terms of having that regular debate challenge and making it through a primary process where there are like a dozen debates. So he's already kind of behind the curve. But that was made more complicated by the fact that it was reported repeatedly he was not preparing. He had a town hall a couple of weeks ago for ABC News that went terribly because he's not used to being challenged by regular Americans. He's usually used to going on TV shows where he is talking to friends, literally Fox and Friends. So he's just, you know, any muscles he might have had of in terms of like debate and formal debate structures, he just has not used in a while. So he fell back on what he usually does, which is scream and yell and lie and interrupt. And I've heard a lot of commentary that basically the strategy was from his camp, you know, they were going to overwhelm Biden because they've built this narrative that Biden is weak and infirm and maybe on drugs. And the idea was to do this like shock and awe campaign for the first 30 minutes of the debate to knock Biden off his game. And that didn't actually happen. Joe Biden showed a great deal of stamina, and that frankly doesn't surprise me. I've seen Joe Biden ride a bike in the last couple of months, so you know he's clearly a healthy man despite his 78 years. But yeah, it wasn't surprising what happened. On the other hand, I mean, watching it happen in real time was like the ultimate train wreck. You didn't want to watch, but you couldn't turn away.
Yeah, I mean, it reminded me of a few things, but this is sort of obscure. But there was a stage fight between a couple of football players, King Kong Mosca, the wrestler, and I think it was Joe Capp. Anyway, it was a Hall of Fame thing. I don't know if you saw it, Adam, but they were being presented with an award. They're both football players, Canadian football, and then Mosca just like punches the guy
due
to something that happened 50 years ago. And obviously there was no physical knockout punches. There were no knockout punches in the thing. I don't know why it reminded me of that, because it did seem like a couple of, not to be ageist, but really like a couple of old dudes. The Statler and Waldorf were mentioned from the Muppet Show. It was just like, going at each other. But it did show with Joe Biden, Trump was kept mentioning, 47 years and you've done nothing. Those 47 years, I think, served Biden well, because he is a bona fide politician. So all of that time in the trenches, he's been in all kinds of debates. And they said supposedly his first debate was in Kingston, Ontario, which was weird. That was, our media always tries to find some kind of factoid that they can tie it to Canada somehow. So, and there's me doing that too. But I thought that was interesting that the first actual debate the guy had was at Queens. Not surprising. So, yeah, and he just did the stay the course kind of thing. He's trying to be the classic politician. The debate, as this style harkens back to, it was Kennedy versus Nixon, right? Is considered the first televised debate, but of this style. So we're going back, what is that now, 60 years.
Yeah.
And Trump in maybe not as much in the previous debate with Hillary Clinton, but in this one, managed to turn the whole thing on its head. Now, it was interesting. We watched the CBS feed, and they had some, well, not highlights, but they were just sort of filling a bit of time with the previous debate. And weirdly, the two comments that people may remember from that, when Trump called Clinton a nasty woman, she was going after him on his taxes.
Yeah.
And the same with that. What was the other comment when she said that he wasn't paying any tax? She kind of repeated it, and he's like, well, that makes me smart. But this time, the smart was definitely not showing, to the point where now, famously, I'm sure there's merch and swag out of Biden's comment, will you shut up, man? I laughed so hard. I don't know. There was percentages given as to people that watch it for political reasons and for entertainment value. I don't know if all of Canada was watching it for entertainment value. For me, it was pure entertainment value, because obviously we can't vote for them. There is a deep seriousness to the American election, but at the same time, it was just so ridiculous that you couldn't help but laugh.
Yeah, I can't remember who I heard say it, but they said, it was basically Trump's Twitter feed showed up.
debating a Twitter feed.
And the problem with that is, you even talk to like some hardcore Trump supporters, like not necessarily like the hardcore, like the people who go to rallies and stuff, but like Republicans who support him because he's the Republican standard bearer, and because they've made certain compromises vis-a-vis tax cuts or conservative judges and all that. What they will tell you is that the thing they hate about Trump the most and wish he would do less is tweet. And that is the aspect of Trump that was on display. It was 100% pure Twitter id, with all the Fox News sirens. And I've been hearing a lot of people talk about Fox News as a language, because he's like bringing things up that you would only know about if you watched Fox News, like the whole Moscow mayor's wife payment to Hunter Biden, which is untrue, Hunter Biden being dishonorably discharged from the army, which is untrue. But like, these are all talking points that you only dig up when you go to the far right. And in the void of that, and Joe Biden has had to learn the lessons of all the other past times somebody has tried to debate Trump and get and have ultimately failed to stop his arrival at the presidency. The best times for Joe Biden were the times he was like ignoring Trump, looking right into the camera and talking to the people. But he that took a heck of a lot of discipline. And you see the fault in discipline sometimes, like in that moment where he said, "Would you shut up, man?" Or like, "This guy's a clown," or things like that. But I mean, that even in those moments, those are like the ultimate expressions, I think, of a lot of people, both in the United States and around the world, who are sick of the Trump show and would like to go back to a time where you could just not pay attention to politics for a couple of days and be comfortable that the president isn't driving the liberal democratic order into the ground. So, Joe Biden had to walk a very, very thin line. He couldn't get into the mud with Trump. He couldn't respond to every half-truth or fake truth or whatever was going on. He had to make his points. He had to outline why he should be president now, while also scoring the points against Trump by talking about why Donald Trump's been an awful president, aside from just his bad personal politics and interactions. It's just like there were so many ways it could go bad for Biden, but at the same time, just Donald Trump could not help himself at all. And I think that would also extend to the point where Chris Wallace just pointedly said, hey, you want to denounce white supremacy right now? And Trump's like, yeah, all right, it's pretty bad, whatever, you know, moving on.
Yes, and a shout out to the Proud Boys, which was just really weird. And then the next day, denying, oh, I don't know who they are. I have no idea who that is. He's the ad hominem king, right? That's how he rolls. But he's also like a saboteur. He's just throwing everything he's got. There's like grenades and trying to get a zinger in. But yeah, it's just so chaotic. It doesn't really work because there is a way in politics to do that. I thought they were focusing so much on Hunter Biden because maybe they thought that the Biden team was going to go at Trump about Ivanka's involvement with the taxes. And the taxes was a question. Yeah. And obviously came up and was, well, not batted aside, but it didn't get the discussion that some other things did.
That was the obvious retort, you know.
Yeah, it fell a bit flat. I paid millions of dollars, and you got millions back by the sounds of it, right?
But I mean, I think this is one of those get into the mud things, and you know, Trump doesn't mind getting dirty, but nobody likes it when both people on the stage get dirty. And Biden could have very easily gone down the list of like, well, Don Jr., Ivanka, and Eric are, you know, can't sit on the board of charities because you guys were ripping off charities with the Trump Foundation.
Yeah. The thing about Trump's kids is that they're like embedded in they're pretty much part of the team. Whereas in most cases, the kids are just virtually a separate world. I mean, not quite like royalty, but like, could you imagine the debate? Like somebody, you know, Amy Carter lives in a treehouse or whatever. Like, right. You know, go back in time for all of the kids. You know, Ronald Reagan Jr. is a dancer, whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. It really, in the scheme of things, it doesn't matter. They were trying to score something there, and it kind of fell flat. I'm sure it appealed to the base because they love that stuff, right? Enough of the what about Hunter? And Trump swore at one point, didn't he? I thought I heard I don't want to say it on the air, but it's like, and I really started laughing because like, did he say what I thought he said? Because it was just so fast and furious, you know. Bless the closed captioners, because there's no way you're going to keep up with that
no idea. But the things I keep kind of coming back to, I come back to a couple things. Number one, Chris Wallace, it wasn't just that he couldn't keep control, because I don't think anyone could have kept control.
No.
I mean, like, you could have had Sergeant Slaughter there moderating and he probably would have lost control.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was like the things like, Mr. President, I think you're going to really like this question coming up. And it's like, no. Like,
trying to butter him, yeah.
Treating the president of the United States like he's a toddler. You know, Donald, I know we're grocery shopping right now, but as soon as we're done here, we're going to go to Zeller's and we're going to go down the toy aisle and maybe we'll see something you like for your birthday. It's, you know, that kind of thing I found terribly galling. He did not have to do that. You don't have to be his friend. You don't have to hold his hand because he doesn't like the democratic order of things. And the thing with the white supremacist moment too, it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just that he wouldn't denounce it. He said, to go down the order of things, Donald Trump says, okay, I guess I kind of denounce it. Who should I denounce? And And then Joe Biden was the one who said, how about Proud Boys? And then Donald Trump goes, well, I think they should stand back and stand by. And then he comes out on Wednesday and says, oh, I have no idea who the Proud Boys are. That's like, first of all, why do you need to identify a specific group to denounce? Because are there good white supremacists? Isn't this just there are many fine people on both sides all over again? I mean, it's not just that the answer was bad. There are multiple layers to why the answer was bad. And, he just has not been able to clean it up. In spite of the fact that even Republicans were like, dude, could you just please denounce white supremacy just once when you're asked so that we don't have to run past television cameras saying, oh, no, we didn't see it. Bye. See you later.
But and not wanting to slag the base and his audience, because it is an audience. Everything's an audition for him, really. I don't think he passed. But two more. There's two more debates to come. 15th of October in Miami. Yeah. And they're talking about muting the mics, maybe. Sounds like the Trump camp aren't very happy with that, and it's understandable because that is his MO. So, but anyway, I assume we'll probably be watching those, or maybe not. I don't know. There's lots going on. There's still a ton more to unpack on that. But
even if he decides, to show up, because, I mean, that's the other side of it, too, is that anything you do plays into the narrative. So the debate commission coming out saying, maybe we have to make some changes. The guy who's in charge of communications for the Trump campaign, Tim Murdaugh, released a statement after they said that and go, well, there they go. Here's Biden working the refs, working against Trump. Yeah. This whole system's against him. Deep state, blah, 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 blah. So even though Donald Trump is the reason why the debate commission has to look into amending their format, it still works out in Trump's favor because Donald Trump is the billionaire president who everybody is against. So nobody's had to shovel more crap than Donald Trump in the history of the planet.
The most crap we have ever seen. Yeah. So, and it's all Hunter Biden's fault. But anyway, more on that in a future date, but turning to Canada in particular now and Ottawa. Adam, there's this strange gang of people camping out at the War Memorial in Ottawa, and it turns out that this property is under the National Capital Commission, but it's essentially the federal government look after it. And some of these people have been there for a while. They have this sort of mixed It's the kind of thing we're seeing where there's anti-maskers, there's, they use the words tyranny a lot, they don't like Trudeau, but they also don't like Jagmeet Singh and the NDP because they're propping up Trudeau's what they call tyrannical government. And it would seem that one of these people at this encampment decided to go after Singh and kind of chase him down. We've obviously both watched the video, but this, for the people that haven't seen it, Singh is walking across Wellington Street to get a cab beside the hotel on the other side of the canal. And this dude is just kind of harping at him in that usual way. It's very uncomfortable. And I know Singh is the type of person that can handle himself because he does know martial arts. And I'm not sure if the person making this video did this. I could have just lobbed him into the canal, no problem. But I think it was, who was it? It was Van Coverden from down the road. There said that Singh has like a kung fu level of patience with people. We saw it in the past at that talk where Singh, I don't know if he's becoming the leader or just become leader of NDP, and somebody from the same crew, let's say, did the same thing and stood up and tyranny, blah, 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 and he managed to talk her down. But this is trending. I know we've talked about this in the past. We'll probably talk about it in the future too. But are we at the point where the confrontational style of certain people that don't like what politicians are doing is getting to the tipping point of where something bad is going to happen?
I don't know if something, one can make the argument that something bad has already happened. I mean, he wasn't part of the Canadian Revolution, but the guy who ran his truck through the gates of Rideau Cottage. Back in July, he was not part of the Canadian Revolution, but he was part of a group that felt that Justin Trudeau was a tyrant who had to be brought do justice with, shall we say, extreme severity and a car full of automatic weapons. And yeah, I mean, the guy who was accosting Jagmeet Singh, Brian Kidder, the same guy who tried to place Trudeau under citizen's arrest. He was detained by RCMP. He wasn't arrested and he wasn't charged. He was detained, though. They basically just kept him in the cuffs for an hour and let him go again. Part of the same crew where somebody went to Catherine McKenna's office and berated one of her staffers while videotaping it. And I mean, this wasn't even Brian Kidder's only, you know, citizen's arrest takedown of the week. He tried to put a member of a journalist with Radio Canada under arrest, apparently under the opinion this journalist whose name I can't remember, but that he was a Bloc MP, because I guess all French people are members of the Bloc Québécois, which
I think, I mean, it was Daniel Thibault. Is that
it's not racial profiling, but maybe it's like francophone profiling, but so I mean, again, when we talked about this before, I mentioned how there's definitely a performative aspect to this, and I think there is a real danger to this, obviously, too, about how far somebody can take this. But the fact that they, you know, they have their cameras out, and he Jagmeet Singh at the end walks right, and he goes, "Well, next time we're gonna dance," which sounds like such like a fake tough guy movie line. There's a fine line between these guys being nuisances and then somebody eventually taking it too far, and not even necessarily somebody getting killed, but like somebody getting hurt, somebody ending up in, you know, push, you know, the confrontation between the Kidder and the journalist got kind of physical in places. Kidder tried to stop him from entering the Radio Canada building, and, you know, was trying to grab him by the arm and things. So one thing could have gone wrong, and the whole predicament could have become just utterly vicious and become a whole different story. Fortunately, the thing with Mr. Singh did not. But I mean, as you said, largely because incidents like this are old hat to Jagmeet Singh. But it's not impossible, or it's not too hard to envision a confrontation like this going so horribly wrong. It becomes more than just a cute little viral video about how screwy some people camping out at the War Memorial are.
Yeah, I was surprised that Singh was walking where he was. Not that he shouldn't be able to move unmolested around Ottawa or anywhere for that matter, but I think it's something to do maybe with the construction that's going on at almost at Queen's Park, Parliament Hill, because I don't know if people have seen it, but it's under wraps for years and years and years. It's going to take them a long time to do that, so maybe that's why he was walking. But yeah, it is one of those things. I have to say, I took one for the team as well. I watched one of the Canadian Revolution's videos on YouTube. There's no way I'm going to their website. There is just no way. But I wanted to get sort of a feel of the gist of what this group is about. And it is, they're not very large. There is the hodgepodge of ideas, everything from QAnon. They're calling themselves, well, not just the Canadian Revolution, but I can't remember. They've stolen some Indigenous imagery. Noble Savages. They're calling themselves the Noble Savages.
Oh, that's not so great.
No, it's not so great. And there's endless reams of this crap on YouTube. So, and it was exactly what I thought it was. I didn't watch very much of it, but I just wanted to get an idea of what was going on. And I think the longer they hang around, the more unsafe it's probably going to get. And I think the mayor of Ottawa is, you know, saying to Parliament and it's the Parks Commission. I can't remember the proper name of it. Saying, look, you know, you should probably like consider getting rid of these people. Because I was thinking back, and we did talk about it at the time, just over 4 years ago, when Joe Cox of the Labour Party in the UK was shot. And same thing. And I think she was stabbed as well. She was just walking around. She was like a backbencher, like not really a high profile. She was a known person, but she wasn't high profile. And I think that's the concern, that somebody takes their ideas or their thoughts, or whatever they may be, right, to the next level. And we see what I would call an American style approach to it, because that's when it's going to get really dangerous. I think we're teetering right now in Canada, where it's, and like you said, the guy that came to Rideau Hall, and he drove from Manitoba, like straight through, and drove through the gates, and how that didn't get escalated even to the point where he got taken out, not unlike the shooter that ended up inside Parliament. I don't know, but it's precarious at this point. It's teetering on this borderline thing. And, you know, going back to, I don't think that Trump helps things. I know he's president of America, and you would say he has very little to do with Canada, but that sort of approach, we see it in these people in this type of protest, because people have the right to protest in this country, right? But these so-called patriots don't, you know, they don't believe in the Constitution, they don't believe in government, they don't believe in this and that. I mean, if you're that deep on these values or whatever, you should probably run, right? But they won't. It's this confrontational, like, oh, I'm just going to take it into my own hands.
And they believe in a version of the Constitution that doesn't exist. I mean, and it's basically the one that doesn't have the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Down with freedom.
The thing of it is, too, you know, talking about, like, rousting them out of their encampment. I mean, it's one of these very fine line things, because I think the second you send police in there to break it up, they're not just kooks. They're not just these, you know, kooky people, you know, who believe in kooky things. They become an oppressed group that they clearly are onto something if state agents are rousting them and arresting them. And then what happens after that? If these people are truly of a cause, and that cause is dangerous enough for armed officials of the state to clear them out, then you know, what is the effect then? Do you give them more press than they deserve at that point?
It's achieving what they want, and they know. I think they know enough that particular patch of ground is unique, right? That there is all these, it's not exactly setting a trap, but you're right, it will martyr them to some degree. Oh, look, they carried us away, tyranny, right? Maybe they can get them on some kind of anti-mask or, you know, mask up bylaw or something.
Well, but, I mean, it's also, you know, what is it today, October 1st, and you know, I'm here in Politico headquarters, I have my window open a crack just so I can enjoy fresh air, but you know, I'm sitting here in short sleeves, but I'm feeling the cool. Like, how is this going to become a winter encampment too? I mean, it could be a thing where, you know, the cold weather moves them out, and maybe they don't come back next year.
Yeah, so, I think they'll get moved out on a technicality or something. You've got an open fire, so you know the kind of things that they use with protesters the world over. But tear gas, I don't know. We'll see. Good thing I'm not in charge of the Parks Commission. I'd be like, okay, you out. But yeah, that's never going to happen. But what is going to happen is we're going to take a bit of a break for some PSAs and some announcements, a little bit of music, and then we're going to get to Adam's feature interview with Kathy Downer. So stay tuned. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM. We're heard every Thursday at 5 o'clock.
Side. And I try and I try my best to look a little bit like them.
That was Guelph's very own Bar Mitzvah Brothers from the album Let's Express Our Motives. And the song was A Library Page. And the cover of that album is actually the very spot where the downtown library is supposed to go, the old family thrift store. It's actually very beautifully done. Yes, so talk about on point for music, like 100% right on for the next. Just miracles do happen here at CFRU. So, Adam, you spoke to Kathy Downer, and tell us a bit about what you talked about.
Well, it's all about the library. Counselor Downer has years and years of experience on council issues, so she's literally seen it all in terms of how this project has developed since the 90s. So we're going to cover that history, cover the debate, and cover where some of the minefields might be when this thing finally gets hashed out on Monday and Wednesday. So let us proceed.
Lots of fans of the library debate, so let's get to that now.
Kathy Downer, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on again. I always enjoy coming on Open Services.
Well, unfortunately, we can't welcome you to the second floor yet. That's still a work in progress.
Sounds like it might be a while, too.
yes, you're quite right. I want to lean on your history and your expertise for a minute, and I realize it may be difficult, but we're talking about the new main branch of the library, that discussion coming forward next week to council. This has been a 20-25 year project in some respects. Can you sum it up in 500 words or less how we got here?
Oh, wow. There's documents on this. You know, it started in 1995. I've seen the chronology. And when I first became back on council in 2014, I asked for the chronology from the library and from the city on all the motions because nothing was really happening at that time. And so it's been going on in different iterations. It started out at in 1995 as a $10 million project that at that time the library was starting to have some needed repairs and was starting to get seemed to be small. You know, through a lot of studies and everything in 2003, then we had the vote council to move forward with the library at a cost of around $17 to $20 million and buy the purchase the post office. So that was fine. And then a couple months later, a whole new council was elected and threw that out the window.
Well, let me just interrupt you here for a second. At this time, the plan was to buy the post office on Upper Wyndham, which is now a building being used by the County of Wellington.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So that whole thing was, and then the county purchased it and for a ridiculous price, and we could have had it for a ridiculous price too. So that didn't happen. And then I think what happened then and subsequently, like, so that term was lost as far as the library is concerned. And then in the 8 years that I was off council, it seemed to be as a bystander that it got put off even more due to there was the health unit building that needed capital funding, and then there was a police renovation building that needed funding, and it was kept being put on the back burner. And so when I came back on, I asked what it sort of created another life. And this last term and this term, there's, you know, there was some movement. We updated the functional plan and in 2017, and then, you know, it still confirmed it as a requirement for 88,000 square feet, which of the good, better, best was the good model, at least that they thought we could get away with doing. And here we are. So then, you know, they didn't ask, they also, the city, during the last term, I think it was last term, they also assessed all the property we owned in the downtown just to reconfirm that Baker Street was the best site for this. And it was still deemed as the best site to put the library, though fronting onto Wyndham at that time. That was sort of the design they had in mind. And so it went out for the, you know, the RF request for proposals. Would you be interested in doing this? And eventually Windmill got it. And which is a quite a good company, and it was going to be combined with another institution. It was hoped to be Conestoga. That's not happening now. And also in apartment blocks. And the original plan for the library that came a year ago was to have the library underneath an apartment block facing onto Wyndham at a cost of $67 million. And some of that was in development charges and some of it was levy. And that we sent them away to do further design. So between a year ago and now, I guess a number of things has happened. And it became evident that it was difficult, and there were issues with acquiring those last two properties to make that happen. And then, you know, they started thinking a bit more outside the box, and they decided, let's try it this way, making it a standalone library. This is less, much more than 500 words, I know. And they decided to make it a standalone library in the south end of the site. And once they started looking at the possibilities of that, you know, my first reaction was, oh, that's... I don't like, you know, that may solve the problem for the library. They like the idea of a standalone building, but what does that do for the north, the upper Wyndham, right? Which had meant to be an anchor at one time. But I have, you know, since been convinced and seen presentations where, you know, Baker Street and Chapel Lane, when you see how attractive some of our other side streets are, like Wilson Street and Douglas Street, it can work. It can work, and it, you know, we don't necessarily need an iconic building on Wyndham Street. We can have a lovely library in that space, I think. And that the two apartment blocks where you have maybe 700 people living is still a pretty good anchor for that north end of Upper Wyndham. And we'll have a lot of spinoffs, I think, economically.
Right. At the end of the day, it's about the economic redevelopment of an area that has sort of been underutilized. Yeah. That unless you're going to, you know, pre-COVID times, going up to catch a show at the music theater, you're probably not going too far up Upper Wyndham anymore.
Right, right. That's right.
Well, you said before we started recording that you took a little behind-the-scenes tour of the current main branch, and I think that people on council, people at the city who have that kind of opportunity to get to see what's going on behind the scenes might be able to shed a bit more light in terms of what the necessity of the new library branch. Can you talk a bit about, you know, what goes on behind the scenes at the library that is sort of the more as convincing to you as sort of the other needs we're talking about in terms of why the new building is necessary?
Yeah, so I guess too, because part of the problem is with the existing library in the very sorry condition that it's in, is that there's been a promise of a new library for 20 years, and so they haven't invested any money in it. So in the last 10 years, only $1.1 million has been invested, and $500,000 was this year on some upgrades and repairs. But having been there, the elevator is very small. I would say extremely small, maybe not even 28 inches. And I do measurements for elections, Ontario and Canada, so I know that that's way below. A wheelchair has to go in one way and back out of it, and it breaks down twice a week, sometimes with people in it. The hallways are extremely narrow. There's asbestos in the basement in this big old octopus type furnace that's just sitting there now, but also around the pipes. The electricals are ancient. It needs a new roof. This was all in this site assessment that was done, but there was visuals that I actually posted pictures on my Facebook of the problems in this library. So we're not adequately serving people with disabilities in our community. It's very sad. That it's actually disgraceful, I have to say. To build a new elevator would cost over $500,000, and it would have to be on the exterior of the building. And if we don't get on with this library, I think we need to do this. As our report has said, our deficiencies from an accessibility standard are a liability for the library and for the city. And then there's just other things you know, there's not room to do the types of programmings that you need to do today, and along with all the accessibility. So I guess the question I keep saying, well, if we're not going to go ahead with a new library, then we need to upgrade this one. Like, we can't, it's not going to be helping us. But if you're going to delay this any longer, we can't let people with disabilities backed out of an elevator and be broken down into elevators. We can't treat people that way. And so that's sort of my bottom line there. So that speaks to sort of why I don't think we can delay it. I mean, there's the other issues around costs that people are questioning too.
Is it a matter of like maybe now or never? Like if council votes no on Wednesday not to proceed, does this never happen and maybe it's back to the drawing board?
I don't think it'll happen for this council, and I think we need to put money in the budget to make this building more accessible, and that will cost more than put a roof on it. I mean, it's always leaking too. I mean, your article a while back about, you know, the library falling down with a big hole on its side. I mean, that's not too far off the reality.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in deplorable conditions. So I think it's probably never. I think, you know, the mayor is calling for a $43 million library. He doesn't want the levy. But that's a 60,000 square foot library. It's not based on any evidence or studies that have been done over and over again. And my guess is we can't force the library to build something that's inadequate.
Right.
They know and say, okay, we're not going to do that. So I don't know if that's the case, but I suspect with all the public engagement they've done, with all the studies they've done, with all the hundreds of thousands of dollars spent studying this project, that it just won't go ahead.
Right. Is there a report somewhere that you're aware of that talks about something along the lines of what you were discussing, like all the changes that would be made? Like, is there like an invoice of what it would take to bring the current library up to even like a minimum code? I mean, because not taking into account things like the stacks are too tall by modern AODA standards, just like to have like a proper accessible elevator and to take out all the asbestos and to fix the roof. Like, is there an itemized?
I don't have the, there was a site assessment study done in 2017. So it would be in there, and I don't know what the costs are, but just the in the executive summary, and I can send you the link to it. It says that, you know, it would cost millions to bring this building up to repair because it needs new windows, new roof, all of those things. And then it's, I mean, accessibility, it says the worst problem is the accessibility standards are terrible. So you'd need, in order to make it accessible, we know from a space-wise, we need an additional 11,000 square feet just to meet the OADA standards of today. So we can't, there's nowhere you can put that on site. So that's just to improve that. So that's a huge cost alone if you start looking at trying to do something there. So, right, we'd have to spend millions and millions to deal with this. And getting asbestos out of the basement is very expensive as well.
And it'd probably have to close down the library to do that work, too.
You would have to close down the library for quite a while. Look how long it's taken us to renovate the police station. And I don't know where you would put, like, where would you put the temporary library?
Yeah. Great point. I want to talk a bit about procedure. You know, we have a meeting where the South End Rec Center, or the South End Community Center, I should say, and the new main library are being discussed at the same meeting. Is this, I mean, given some of the debate that you see online and probably in your email box as well, is this maybe intentionally or unintentionally setting up like a false dichotomy, like it's Thunderdome, we're going to come out of this meeting with one or the other, but maybe not both?
I don't think it should be either or. But I think, you know, we have the potential to. And I guess, as I said, there's been study after study, business case, all of those things done for the new main central library, which isn't just a central administrative thing. It's also a branch for the downtown area. Like the closest library in the West End is out of the West End Rec Center, and the East End is out in the east at the edge of town. Right, so this is a branch for the downtown area, downtown neighborhoods for quite a ways out. So it's been studied a lot, and yet when you look at the we don't seem to want to do the same due diligence on a project that has development charges paying for 85% of it. Mm. And that has me concerned. Like, I've been a supporter of the South End Rec Center, but it's based on a 2014 feasibility study based on a 2009 master plan, which makes me concerned about how it takes us into the future. Like, we'd already heard that the site wasn't large enough years ago to put the library in there. New wetland legislation and whatnot has made that there's more protected land on that site than there was originally. It wasn't a good site. At one point I had suggested, and I still think it's a good idea, but it's gone nowhere, is that you should take the rinks out of that South End site and put four rinks together over on Centennial or somewhere, make it create economies of scale, and in the South End make it a real like community center, because people will travel to rinks with their kids and things like that. Right. But the South End, you'd have room for the library then, and you'd have room to do a much more programming in a center like that. That's what I personally would have preferred. That's not what we've got. And so I do have concerns about that facility being able to adequately serve the South End, because from downtown all the way out, because there's no community rinks between here and there now, that's other than Centennial, and the swimming pool is now closed there. Right. All the way out, plus the additional 17,000 people in Claremont.
Right.
So, I don't think we've done the due diligence on that center. That doesn't mean I'm not going to support it. But I have my concerns that I will express at the meeting about that building. And it went to the Committee of Adjustment last year, and it reduced its parking spaces from 1,500 to 500, which are half of them shared.
Mm.
So, for people worried about parking, that may be another issue. I don't know.
Right. Parking is a whole other discussion. I am curious, though, and this may be getting into confidential legal stuff territory that isn't discussed in open session, but what happens if the library, if council doesn't vote in favor of the library plan as presented? What happens with the windmill agreement?
Well, I personally think that if we don't go ahead with the library, the windmill agreement is dead, because it was part of the RFP. And it was meant as a package, even though part we'd be severing off after they built it, our building, the library. It's part of a bigger project. It's part of a bigger plan. And I don't see the point of moving ahead. I'm sure it would be expensive to back out of this project. And there would be consequences. But to me, it's a package. Legal consequences. Because we've gone so far with it and we went out with an RFP, so much work has been done. I'm sure there's going to be legal consequences if we back out. And at the same time, I do think the library is a key component to the Baker Street District and why we wanted to move forward with this to make it a better asset in the downtown.
I want to phrase this question is, not to necessarily pit one type of constituent against the other, but you go online, anything that is library related, whether it's my site, whether it's Guelph Today or whatever, you get bombarded with these comments like, we can't afford it, why aren't we building a hospital, on and on and on and on. When these things come to council, I can't think of an occasion where the Library Project has come to council, and maybe you can inform me otherwise, but I can't remember an occasion where the delegate list, and we're sometimes talking 20, 30 people on the delegate list for these things, where it hasn't been overwhelmingly pro new library, like 98% of the delegates coming out pro new library. So where does this friction come from? I mean, why don't these people who are dead set against this and the expense and all this, you know, why do they not bring their voice to the meeting?
They don't, and they haven't, and that's, you know, that's why we have to be counselors, and you need to be careful about what you read on social media. It's so easy for uninformed people to say, oh, we don't need it, or why do we even need it, or why do I want it? And when politicians throw out figures like, it's going to cost us $62 million and provide no other information. Mm. That's what happens. All they see is a big figure, and they respond, and they don't take the time to write. And you're right. So last year when we had the building, the $67 million, I think there was only like two letters in opposition out of, you know, a lot that are in favor, and all the delegations, they don't take the time to come and oppose it. And I think you're going to see the same. When you see the list of letters for the library and the delegations, I think you'll see very few. And yet, you know, so I don't know. I don't understand. Right. I have found that people, actually, there are people who have said no to the library. And once they have gotten more information, they change their mind. Like once you actually educate them around the issue, they do change their mind. Mm. Some don't. Some just say, no, we don't need it. I don't care it. I don't use it.
Right. Yeah. Maybe for the last couple of minutes, by the time this airs, it will be about an hour until your virtual town hall. You have Scott Butler, who is the president of the library board. But you also have Chief Kobe, and this will be his second town hall appearance. So maybe focusing on the chief, in terms of what you hope to get out of having him appear again, and you know, given everything that happened and everything that's discussed.
I'm speaking to him tomorrow too to talk a bit more about our expectations. Our neighborhoods in Ward 5, you know, like a lot of neighborhoods around the downtown, are interested in safety. You know, there's been a lot, an increase in break-ins and things like that. But the other thing was, when we had our budget town hall last year and they came in with their big budget increase, a lot of people were concerned. Ward 5's, you know, fairly sophisticated people living in Ward 5. They asked a lot of really good questions. It wasn't so much the number, but is it in the right place and should we be looking at prevention and more? And so we originally wanted him out in the spring to talk about that, and that's what he's coming for now. And now that they're coming in for another 4.7% increase, I want him to talk and justify to constituents around those figures. Around those numbers and what we're getting for that.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we look forward to that, and we look forward to next week's meetings. There's going to be busy ones for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, Kathy Downer, thank you so much for your time today.
Thunderdome 2, the Royal City, coming soon. And also coming soon is a meeting tonight, Adam? Is that what you were saying there? Did I get that right?
Yeah, there's a Ward 5 town hall that starts in a little over an hour, and it's a Zoom meeting, obviously, but the link is there on the Ward 5 website, so just go to ward5.ca to find the link.
So you're going to get some snacks and then live tweet the whole thing? Is that what's going on? Or?
That's the plan.
I figured that. So, and since we're out of time, Adam, can you tell the good people where they can find out more about you, what you do, where you live tweet, and all that?
Yes, I'll be live tweeting at my handle, Adam A. Donaldson, on Twitter. You can also find me at that on Instagram, too. And you can find all my political stuff at guelphpolitico.ca.
And I always keep forgetting to say that we are on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, like you said 10,000 times before we went into
and
lockdown.
And Spotify, too.
And Spotify. So if you're looking for our show, you can find us anywhere, but mostly here on CFRU 93.3 FM. This, you've been listening to Open Sources. Join us again next week. Same time, same channel, and we strive to keep it going regardless of what roadblocks have been thrown everyone's way. So take care, folks. Have a good week, and we will be back next week with some more Open Sources.